Folks, have you checked out the Irish History Podcast shop recently? Right now, I have a sale of 30% off everything when you use the code SALE30. So go to irishhistorypodcast.ie/shop and get 30% off everything when you use the discount code SALE30.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Irish History Podcast. My name is Finn Dwyer. Through the course of this episode, we're going to journey deep into our history, possibly as far from the War of Independence as you can get. Certainly, the show has never covered anything as old as this. The place we're going to go to is twice as old as the pyramids, and our ancestors who built the structure we're going to visit did pretty strange things there, so stay tuned for that. Now, getting back that far is a bit of a winding road. Lots of you are going to know that over the last 6 months, I've been focused on the War of Independence. So I'm going to explain why I'm going to take a break from that just for this episode. So today's show started out as a normal War of Independence episode about an IRA prison in Dublin. But through the course of writing the script, something went wrong. It started out with a niggling self-doubt, but this developed into full-blown writer's block, which has stalled production of the War of Independence series completely. It's a bit like trying to unravel a ball of string. You start out with a small, simple knot, but instead of taking my time, I ignored the problem and kept on pulling at it. And now, 4 weeks later, it's gotten a lot worse, to the point that I'm completely tied up. Now, the crux of the problem probably lies in the fact that I didn't really believe in writer's block. As I said on a previous episode, I used to think it was a bit self-indulgent. So instead of stopping, I just kept trying to write that same episode, and that really didn't help. Writer's block is a bit like insomnia. The more you think about it and try and resolve it, the worse it gets. Eventually, I was quite wound up, so I rang a friend of mine, Carl. Now, Carl worked as a carpenter for years, and he plied his trade in London. And I figured, given that was a pretty hectic working environment, that Carl would be pretty unforgiving when I said I thought I had writer's block. I thought he'd just tell me to cop on and get on with it, and that he couldn't say he had carpenter's block when he was going to building sites in London. But Carl's response took me back. It actually took me back so much that I asked him to stop and I turned on a recorder, because I was feeling that maybe he was explaining my conundrum better than I could. So now you can hear what Carl said when I asked him how he tackled problems when he was a carpenter.
Just take a step back, even for a day or two. Just step back for a day or two. Because if you just go ahead with it, if you're unsure, it's the same as anything. There's the old saying, measure twice, cut once, which is a similar sort of thing where instead of just going ahead with saying, just say, oh, yeah, that'll do. Yeah, I got it right. And then realising later on you've made a mistake. So you can start off with a small mistake, a small error in measurements. By the time you get to the end, you've got a massive error.
Now, I thought he was really on the money when he finished up with this advice.
Do you want to do a good job? Do you want to do a proper job? Or do you want to do an half-assed job, which is going to come back to bite you? Because the way they get other jobs is not so much by what you know and all that, it's recommendations from other people. It's the same as anything. It's like you as a writer and a podcaster. If you started just tossing out podcasts just for the sake of it, you get away with it for the first couple. After that, you'd have people dropping off, just thinking, well, this fella's not interested anymore. What's the point?
That's exactly the name of the game when it comes to podcasting. Forcing a show out that isn't very good won't work for me, or more importantly, it won't work for you, the listener. Ultimately, podcasts grow when people like you recommend the show to your friends. And if it's not great, well, you're not going to do that, are you? So that convinced me to follow Carl's advice, pause the War of Independence, and take a step back. Now, morbid as this sounds, I find old graveyards great for that kind of perspective. While the tombs can be fascinating to read, the fact that they stretch back centuries can often make your problems seem pretty insignificant. Surely this was where I would find perspective. So I grabbed the microphone and headed to a pretty atmospheric graveyard that's probably over 1,000 years old, just at the edge of Kilkenny where I live. This started a pretty interesting journey that ended up as far from the War of Independence as you can imagine. So next stop, we're going to go to that cemetery, but it doesn't end there. The show, as I said at the start, will take us back over 5,000 years. So I've driven about 3 kilometres outside of Kilkenny and I've arrived at Outrath Cemetery. Now this was a medieval site, dates back centuries, right back into the early medieval period. The name Outrath is a kind of a derivation of Irish, and the original name would have meant Upper Rath. Now a rath is an enclosure and the upper part refers to its position in the landscape. So the cemetery is located on the top of a hill. It's pretty beautiful positioning. From all the landscape around, you can't actually see the cemetery, but when you're up here, you have these lovely commanding views right back into Kilkenny, and over a lot of the land in this part of the country is relatively flat, so you've got lovely views from here. But we've come up obviously to look at the cemetery, and there's some pretty old tombstones in here with some pretty good stories attached to them. So let's just get out of the car and cross the road. It's a really quiet country lane. I don't even feel the need to lock the car. But so the cemetery has this enclosure. It's kind of a sub-circular enclosure. Often you'll find these at medieval sites. Now there was a medieval church here, but that's long gone. And the graveyard today, I don't know if it's even used anymore. Like it's very heavily worn. A lot of the tombstones have fallen over on each other. And they are, you can't read the inscriptions are on the underside. A lot of the tombstones have also collapsed. There's a mixture of different type of tombstones here, like standard enough stone ones. And then there are some pretty impressive, I suppose what you'd call almost altar tombs, where they're like lifted up off the ground. It has almost a Gothic feel to it in some of it. There is actually, I'm just seeing here, some very modern burials here, dating from just like 15, 20 years ago. But there was a survey done here in the 1970s of the tombs that were legible then. So that's like nearly 50 years ago. But that gives us a good recording of the tombs that were here then. And I guess trying to get some perspective on things. And as I said earlier, taking a step back from the War of Independence series, there's one tomb in particular that has drawn me to this cemetery, and that's the tomb of a man called Martin Pierce, I think is his name, maybe Pierce Martin, I'm just looking up, yeah, Pierce Martin. And Pierce Martin was buried here on April the 7th, 1710. He was aged 29 at the time. So he was born in 1681, like 1681, if you put that into context of maybe wider events. For example, America was the English colonies at the time. The United States, or what would become the United States, was a very small country. Europeans had yet to discover places like Australia. So like that the world was very different. I suppose in terms of Irish history, what is very important about this point is when Pierce Martin was born, the Battle of the Boyne would take place 10 years after his birth, or just 9 years after his birth. And it gives you some sense of the world he lived in. The Battle of the Boyne, I should say, is a hugely significant battle between William of Orange and James II. And it kind of establishes the sectarian nature of Irish society into the 18th and 19th centuries, kind of laid down in the aftermath of that battle. So it's a very significant battle, and I suppose still is today. I mentioned it earlier in one of the War of Independence episodes. I'm looking for his tomb here, and I can't, there's directions to it, but I can't find it. Interestingly though, you get a snapshot into this guy's life. So as I said, his name is Piers Martin, but his son is also buried in it. And his son, Michael, died on March the 30th, 1720. He was 20 at the time. So Piers must have had him when he was about 18. But I'm just now, I can't find his tomb, and I'm just wandering around here. There is a kind of a site at the back. I have been up here before. And I think that's where the medieval church was. And we might just walk over there. I didn't really prepare too well to come up here. I'm walking around in lots of nettles, and I'm in shorts. But anyway, we'll make our way on. Don't know if I'm going to be able to reach the what I thought was the church site. It's completely overgrown. I'm passing much more recent graves now, people from the 30s, the 40s. There's one here on the ground. Here's a famine survivor, Patrick Lahey, 1869, aged 66. Mary Lahey, 51, who died in 1861. I think, yeah, we often don't think of these people maybe as famine survivors. I think we have a very specific image of what someone who lived through the famine was, and I think it tends to be people from the west of Ireland, impoverished tenants, and obviously that is part of the story, but not the entire part. I have to say though, this isn't, I'm not necessarily getting the perspective I had hoped by coming to this cemetery. The oldest, kind of reaffirms maybe, the oldest tomb I saw there was, or the oldest tomb I was looking for and I didn't even find it, was from 1710, but even the events in that man's life shaped the War of Independence. And I think what I need to do is try and find something older. And I'm going to go back to the car and take a look around, just do a quick Google and see what might be one of the oldest sites in County Kilkenny. I'm not going to drive too far, but you know, we could drive 30, 40k, I suppose, if we could find a much older site. So I'm just going to, I'll let you know what I find when I'm back in the car. Okay folks, I'm back in the car and I have found the perfect site, I think. It was actually somewhere where I was a couple of days ago. It's a site called Kilmogue. It's about, I'd say, 25 minute drive from here, but Kilmogue is over 5,000 years old. And I reckon if I'm going to find perspective at an archaeology site, an archaeological site, Kilmogue might be it. So I'm going to drive down there and I'll pick up the story when we get there. And I'll tell you all about that site. Pretty cool place.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and t-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So I've just pulled up at Kilmogue, folks, and immediately you can see you're talking about a very, very different site here. When you're at Outhrath, it's very much connected into the modern world in that, like, there's people buried in that cemetery who lived on streets in Kilkenny that still exist today. So I suppose it's kind of interwoven into the Kilkenny, even into the 21st century. But here at Kilmogue, and sorry, I should say the reason I've come here is to look at something called a portal tomb. I'm going to explain a bit more about that when I get down to it. These date from around 5,500 years ago. But immediately you can see the world then was very different.
I've come to what is a pretty remote valley. It's a very gradual valley. The scenery is lovely. It's like green fields, trees, but there's nothing here that would draw people here today as such. So to have, you know, what seems to be, and I'll explain more about it, this portal tomb, a pretty special monument in this area. Today, we can't understand why. Obviously, 5,500 years ago, people understood this landscape very differently. Now, interestingly, there might be a key to this in the name Kilmaug. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to get out of the car and I'm going to start walking down and we'll talk a bit about that on the way down. So the name Kilmaug comes from the Irish word Kilmaug. And Kilmaug refers to the Church of Mog. And there's an interesting thing in that. So that would take us back to the early Christian period, if we're talking about the Church of Mog. And, you know, okay, the early Christian period, that takes us back to around the year 500. But if we go back to this site, now this site was 5,500 years old. So we're talking about 3,500 BC. So that's 4,000 years before maybe the early Christian period or the early medieval period. But the Church of Mog doesn't actually refer to a Christian saint, or the Mog in that is actually a pagan god, Mog. So maybe what this highlights is that at least, say, around the year zero in the Iron Age and the early medieval period, there was something about this landscape that was special. And maybe that explains why the portal tomb was built here. I know it's thousands of years earlier, but it might hint that for thousands of years, this was a pretty special place. Now, I've just walked down from the car about 100 meters and I'm coming up to the portal tomb, and you can see this is a pretty, but you can't see, but I can see it and I'll explain it to you. It's an incredible structure. And I'm going to talk about what people did here in a minute, but first I'm going to explain what this looks like. So a portal tomb consists of about 10 stones. And when I say stones, these are enormous. I'm 6'5" and these are still way taller than me. This tomb stretches up 18 feet into the air. It's constructed of about 6 stones that kind of form a supportive structure, and they're sunk down into the ground. And then there's one huge stone put on top, and that's the capstone. And the capstone here is at an angle running from the ground up into the sky, and it stands, as I said, at 18 feet in height. Now, I'm just going to step into the shelter of the tomb because I think there might be a bit of wind there, but you get a sense of, I hope you can get a sense that this is a huge structure. Now, immediately, I've said that this was built around 5,500 years ago. What was Ireland like 5,500 years ago? Well, we can't be entirely certain, but there is something. So, for example, this was on the verge of the Neolithic Revolution. So people were barely even farming in Ireland when they built this. Now, I was down here last week and I put a picture of this on Twitter or Instagram, and people were asking me then how did they build this, and like the answer is, we just don't know. There's about 150 of these in the country in total, but very few of them have been excavated, so we don't know a huge amount about them. But we'd have to imagine, to build this, now your guess is as good as mine. Each of these stones that make up this are enormous in weight. They weigh several tons. You know, it would take, I'm guessing, dozens of people to move them, but maybe with a system of rollers, and if you erected the supportive stones, getting the capstone on, which weighs several tons, there's no way it could be lifted up there. But maybe they covered in the initial stones with a mound of earth, then rolled the capstone into place and then removed the earth. Who knows? But it certainly takes away the idea that our ancestors 5,500 years ago were somehow primitive people. I don't think that's how it works at all. I don't think they're primitive, or the way we understand it. I think they don't have the tools that we have. Like, we're standing on the generations of knowledge that goes before them. If you're looking for pictures of this and Outrath Cemetery, by the way, I'm going to post them on Patreon. That's at patreon.com/Irish podcast. I'll put as many pictures as I can up there. What's really fascinating, though, for me about this site is what we know about why these were built. So I said it's called a portal tomb, right? And that indicates, obviously, people were buried here. While this one was never excavated, we do have a fascinating insight into what went on here from another one. Now, I'm going to read you a quote now from the website irisharchaeology.ie, where Colm, who runs that website, by the way, it's a really great website. Check it out if you want all things Irish archaeology, basically there. It's irisharchaeology.ie. But Colm there has written the following about portal tombs, and this might give us an insight into what went on here. So it says, one of the very few portal tombs that has been investigated by archaeologists is Pool na Breoine in County Clare by Lynch 2014. At this site, the remains of 22 people were uncovered inside the tomb, including 16 adults and 6 children. Of these bodies, only 8 could be sexed, and these were equally split between males and females. The bones were found in a largely disarticulated state, and this suggests that the human remains had undergone a complex burial ritual. It appears that the dead were initially placed in the tomb as complete bodies and allowed to decompose. Then, at a later date, certain body parts were removed, in particular the skulls and long bones. The reasoning behind this is uncertain, although it may have been related to some form of ancestor worship, where the dead, via their skeletal remains, continued to play a role in the daily lives of their descendants. So in the structure, if what happened at that portal tomb happened here, sometime at the very, very early Neolithic period, a family group, maybe even a bigger group, some group of people were coming here, putting the bodies of people who had died into a, there's a space, you can see there's a space in the tomb where they could have been left. They're left there then to decay, and after a certain amount of time then they come back and take the bones away. And when you think about this, this is like death. This world, if I was saying that I wanted to come somewhere for perspective and take a step back, I don't know if I could come anywhere that would give you perspective like this, because these people obviously had an even, like, the very basics, like, in terms of life and death, they understood those differently than we do. Obviously, they believed that, I suppose, that, like, maybe we have this very, clear delineation between life and death. But you would wonder, with people who carried out a ritual like this, did they see death in the same way? If they were bringing the human body parts, or the bones, maybe the skull and the long bones, somewhere else, did they see that they were still alive in some way? Were they brought back to where they were living? Did they see their dead ancestors as still playing a role in daily life, as Colm alluded to in that discussion there about the excavation of the other portal tomb? When you see this, though, it's really, really mind-blowing to think that, like, 5,500 years ago, like, to try and put this, I think it's worth always trying to put these things into context. And when we think about 5,500 years ago, what was going on in the world, this might help us understand this. So if you take someone like maybe a very famous person, Tutankhamun. Tutankhamun was born exactly at the halfway point between our age today and when this was built. So when Tutankhamun, this was ancient when Tutankhamun would have walked the earth. There is actually one other feature in this area that's presumably somehow related. There's a standing stone in the field next door, and a standing stone is exactly what you would imagine it to be. It's a standing stone, but dating these are very, very difficult. They could be at any point really in the last 5,000 years. And again, very little is actually understood about those, about why they're being erected, because it's just a stone in an upright position. They can be quite spectacular, I suppose, but often, yeah, like, they're just in this situation. It's a standing stone. It's a stone in an upright position in the field, clearly put there by humans. It's not natural, but at the same time, we have no idea why they would have done that. But that presumably alludes to what I was talking about when I was coming down from the car, that this must have been somehow a special place. I guess coming back to where I started this whole going to see these sites is to give me perspective and help me with writer's block. I'm not sure it's going to do that, but it's a really spectacular, gives you food for thought.
So I'm back at home and I just wanted to record a short sign-off. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sorry for the delay in the War of Independence series, and I'll get back on it as soon as this, well, whatever this is, lifts. Until next time, Sloan.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.